The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Some people expect solutions to be expensive to be effective. This is not true. Everyone needs somebody who can be supportive and a guide. You'll find the answers you're looking for and the tools to both find answers and offer solutions on the Dr. Melanie Show. Now, here's your host, Dr. Melanie Barton.
Welcome to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel. 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with colon cancer. I thought my life was over. I felt defeated and out of control. I'd been using a prayer tool called the prayer wheel for 35 years, so I employed it in this situation successfully as well. You can use it by going to www.thedrmelanieshow.com and download it from my resource library. Did you know that on the National Cancer Institute website, it says that there's an increase in prostate cancer rates? About one in every six men will get it during his lifetime. In 2011, there'll be estimated diagnoses of 241,000 men. And unfortunately, about 34,000 men will die of this disease in 2011. But more than 2 million who've been diagnosed are still alive today. On the breastcancer.org site, it says death rates for breast cancer have been decreasing since 1990. They think it's because of treatment advances, earlier detection of certain kinds of screening, and increased awareness. But still, One out of eight every woman will, in the U.S., develop invasive breast cancer in her lifetime. And that doubles if you've got a first-degree relative with it. In 2010, they estimated 261,000 new cases would be diagnosed, and about 40,000 women would die. But as of 2010, there's 2.5 million breast cancer survivors. Hooray! Today's program is going to be two cancer survivors. They're going to tell their stories. So please listen and make sure you pass along this episode to other people. And make sure you go to your doctor for regular checkups. My first guest is Rabbi Dr. Ed Weinsberg, author of the book Conquer Prostate Cancer. He served three Jewish congregations in his 30-year career. He's been a lecturer, an adjunct professor, a publisher of numerous articles about religious and interfaith concerns. He's going to talk to us about his own journey with prostate cancer and the intimacy problems that may come along with it and some solutions. Then my second guest is going to be Kathleen O'Keefe Canavos, author of the book Surviving Cancerland. She's an inspirational speaker and a regular contributor to numerous publications. She's going to tell us how her own intuition helped her get proper testing and today to be a two-time cancer survivor. So let's first talk with Rabbi Dr. Ed. Welcome.
Well, thanks so much, Melody. It's lovely to be with you.
Well, I'm very grateful that you're here and have a story to share with us. I've read your book, as you know, and I want the listening audience to know what kind of sexual problems can occur after an illness like prostate or breast cancer.
Unfortunately, quite a few. As a matter of fact, some people say that the treatment effects cause more sexual and intimacy problems than perhaps the cancer itself, a prostate tumor. For example, a man can have difficulties, I'll use a euphemism, getting it up, having erection.
Right. Right.
A man can have a lowered libido, often depends on the treatment, although the cancer can do that too. And a man can have trouble literally relating to somebody else. He can become quite despondent and have withdrawal symptoms from the people or persons he loves the most.
Mm-hmm. And that's most unfortunate, because that's the time you really need to connect with somebody.
Absolutely.
But I know if people are in pain or they're having these side effects, you know, sex is the last thing on their mind.
Very much so. I will tell you that when I withdrew from my wife, it was for a good 9 months. And
oh my.
She kept saying to me, "Don't you love me anymore?" And that's a very frequent response, because people do take it personally, men or women.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to keep saying, "No, it's not you. I'm not looking at any woman, not even when I go shopping in the supermarket."
Well, that was comforting, I'm sure.
Well, it was. I mean, she probably knows I look. I can tell you a few stories about that. But the point is, I try to reassure her it really wasn't her. It was my biochemistry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have not asked you to talk about this, but could you give us kind of a short synopsis of your journey?
Sure. Essentially, I had some symptoms, which is rare. Most prostate cancer folks don't have any symptoms. It's asymptomatic, and they may just have a routine test, and all of a sudden there's a lump in the prostate or erectile area. And the doc says, "Okay, let's check it out," gives them a PSA exam, unless it's a routine annual one, which I always advocate. Like you said, get tested, see your doctor. And in my case, I had some kind of nutty things going on, such as difficulty urinating and some problems during the sex act. And I went to this doctor and said, "Hey, check me out for cancer. I've been known to self-diagnose." Most patients can't do that. And frankly, there are other reasons why that could happen. I mean, maybe it was my enlarged benign prostate, which I'd had for years, or maybe it was prostatitis, inflammation. But it turned out I was right. PSA had gone up, not markedly, but enough to make him worry. And he took the biopsy, 12 core, 12 tissues were taken. Really uncomfortable, but not at all painful to me, I would say. And in one core, he found a tumor. But the problem was this, that it was the part of the prostate was intruding into the bladder. And that's why I was running to the bathroom. So I got two surgeries for the price of one. I got a new bladder neck. I'm proud to say I have a 4.5-year-old bladder neck. That was in April of 2007. And of course I no longer have a prostate. It was completely removed. The margins were very negative, meaning there was no likelihood of spillover into the pelvic area of cancer cells after the prostatectomy or radical removal of the prostate. But that's when problems began. That's when that nine-month period occurred. And not only that, but even before that, while I was trying to figure out what treatment to take, first I thought it would be radiation of one sort, then another, and finally I got to surgery, but should it be robotic or standard? It occurred to me, if I was confused, and I have a doctorate in gerontology and I've done advanced studies, my goodness, how confused would everybody else be? And every time I've talked with clients, that turns out to be absolutely the case. So I determined to write a book. I was really moved to write a book to help people like me, a book I wish I had had at the time, not be so confused when the doctor says, "Okay, here is an array of treatments. Choose one." I mean, no one's medically trained to do that, and the doctor should probably have a better way of helping a person without coercion get to that point. But it's hard, and I think speaking survivor to survivor, that makes a difference. That's why I wrote a book a year and a half later called Conquer Prostate Cancer, How Medicine, Faith, Love, and Sex Can Renew Your Life. Now, it's exactly 3 years since I wrote that, but it's still very much up to date, still among the top 1% of books on in prostate cancer on Amazon.com. But I'm not here to sell the book. I'm just here to explain that was the beginning of my prostate cancer journey. I said, well, if I can write a book, I better keep writing about intimacy issues, which really perplex people. And I began a blog, also called Conquer Prostate Cancer, although I have a new one called SexAndCancer.com that addresses not just men's issues but women's. And I will add something really important. Prostate cancer is also a woman's issue, just like breast cancer is a man's issue. So I speak okay. to men and women.
Explain that.
When I discuss either. Well, you know, as soon as a man has problems with sexuality or intimacy because of prostate cancer, it impacts on the woman in his life, be it a partner or a spouse. Similarly, mm-hmm. if a woman has breast cancer, let's say she's disfigured, despondent, loses hair, it's going to impact on her husband or partner. And you have to treat people as a couple, that is, address them as a couple, because the conflicts that can come up and the need to understand each other is a tremendous thing. It's a life transition for both parties.
Mm-hmm. It is. And you can attest to the fact that there is life after. There is an intimacy life after you go through treatment.
Absolutely. I'm here to say that I was really compelled to discover ways out of my dilemma and then in turn mm-hmm. guide others just as I try to guide them to select treatment choices with the help of their doctor. I could do that. Well, I could do this also in the area of sexuality and intimacy. So I've developed 10 strategies to conquer ED after prostate cancer, a low libido, and also address mm-hmm. issues of female sexual disorder.
Uh-huh. And these 10 strategies were based on your own experience or research?
A combination. That book took a tremendous amount of research. I have endnotes galore, although I out of compassion for readers, I didn't put them after each chapter. They can forget about them if they want to, though they can look them up, and lots of resources. So I became, like many people who don't start out professionally in a given area, but you research it a lot, you then become something of an expert in these matters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to hear about these 10 strategies, but I don't want to start and then get lost in the middle of them. So how about we take a break now? When we come back, we'll talk about those 10 strategies. How's that?
That'll be great.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Do you know if kidney disease is affecting you? Are your kidneys healthy? You may have kidney disease and not even be aware of it. 26 million people have been affected by kidney disease. Teenagers today are being diagnosed with symptoms such as high blood pressure, diabetes, and obesity. These conditions can worsen kidney health and cause kidney disease. Be sure to tune in to Improve Your Kidney Health with your host, Dr. Rich Snyder, every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The information you get on this program could help save your life.
Are you ready to go green?
You've asked, and we've heard you. Voice America presents the Green Talk Network. Environmental topics are at the forefront of our society, and the Green Talk Network is here to keep you up to date on the latest trends and new innovations for the eco-conscious lifestyle. We'll help promote a variety of ideas on the environment, from global warming issues to how you can become more eco-friendly in your daily activities. Be a part of the solution, not the problem. Visit the Green Talk Network page on voiceamerica.com and tune in to help spread the green.
What it comes down to, ladies, is that defining line between been there, done that, and ain't going back, baby. Yeah, I've heard them call you yuppies and baby boomers, maybe even dolls, babes, darling, sugar, and sweetheart, but I say that women are truly amazing. Join Dr. Marlene for Amazing Women, Brains, Beauty, and Style, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice America Women's Radio Network.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel. Today, we're talking about surviving cancer. My first guest is Rabbi Dr. Ed Weinsberg. He wrote the book Conquer Prostate Cancer. He's a survivor himself. And he's talking about how intimacy can be affected by this cancer and what can be done about it. So before the break, we were just going to start talking about the 10 strategies for reigniting intimacy and sexuality following an illness. So, Rabbi Ed, you want to share that with our audience, please?
Sure, I'll be happy to do it in whatever time we have left. And I do want to stress, Melanie, that I'm talking or addressing men who've had prostate cancer, have sexual problems, and they can be either married or single. So whatever I'm about to suggest goes for both types of people.
Okay.
I'd like to divide these tips into maybe two categories. First, you and your doctor, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, the first thing is it's vital that you get guidance from your urologist or for women gynecologists or other physicians, a family physician, who sometimes are more user-friendly and, pardon the pun, are not as cut-and-dried as surgeons are.
Right.
If you address your sexual concerns with your urologist, do so before anything is decided, any procedure, and as well afterwards, any health procedure you decide on. What you'll often find is they will at least provide you with the medical mechanics of what you can do to reignite sexuality, or at least your capacity for having sex or intercourse. And there are the standard things, Viagra or any of its competitors. They have what's known as a vacuum erection device or penile pump. There's injections, and there's also Muse pellets. And if that's not going to work, some people really get so concerned that they would say, okay, go for the implant, a mechanical implant, which, by the way, is surprisingly easy to insert through another surgery. It might take an hour and a half, three or 4 weeks recovery. And then literally at the push of a button, you can get it up. It's an implant within the penis. It's remarkably easy and natural. Some men have told me that they don't even tell their wives, especially if they're newlywed, because they cannot tell. The button's in the scrotum. It's virtually impossible to push the button accidentally.
Oh, now is the button activated by just motion or battery or how?
Oh, not a battery, but by water in a tube that it can be released into the area of the penis for erection. And it's the man's penis, but with some internal mechanism that allows it to extend. And it's quite reliable. 10 years minimum guarantee, according to some urologists I'm friendly with. The majority of people who can take surgery will benefit from this if they're out of sorts and have nothing else to turn to. And I will tell you, I've counseled men who have told me they're beside themselves, that they can't do it anymore. It reflects on their masculinity in their minds, not necessarily in the mind of the woman with whom they are associated. And so that's what they have to go for rather than struggle. Now, in addition, if you don't go that route with a penile implant, a person should also ask their doctor how to reverse ED and raise their libido by using supplemental testosterone or other hormonal treatments. I personally am on testosterone because mine dropped down to castrate level due to an additional biochemical prior to my surgery, which should not have been administered, but that's another story. The testosterone not only enables you to have a restored libido by virtue of having an increased amount of testosterone per unit of blood, but it also provides a general sense of well-being, allows for better muscle toning at a time in life where many men, starting at the age of 40 or onward, start losing 1% of testosterone anyhow per year, let alone when after treatment there's a precipitous downfall of the amount of natural testosterone. And not everybody is a candidate. You have to do this with your doctor, and you can't do it too soon after a procedure. You got to make sure that your PSA hasn't gone up and that you are at risk for restoring the prostate cancer. Once you got your PSA at a regular level, virtually non-existent or next to that, for at least a year or two, you are a good candidate. My doc told me I'm a poster boy for it because that's what happened in my case. And third, one should consult a sex therapist, a counseling professional. I happen to be a certified sexuality counselor. a healthcare educator or intimacy coach. That, by the way, should be the doctor's job. I insist doctors should know their community resources better, since doctors can't do it all, and they need to refer out in that kind of sense. And I know my wife and I went to 3 sessions, I describe it in my book, with a sex therapist, and it helped us immensely, at least for the short term.
And for so many people, they have to get over the shame of even going to talk to somebody.
It was difficult, especially for my wife, but I will tell you that I carried it off because these sex therapists we saw was very appropriate, actually kind of sexy herself, I might say. It struck me as ironic.
Is your wife listening to this program?
Well, she's not listening to this, but I wrote this in the book. The lady was a blonde with a modestly low-cut, silky dress. You know, what can I tell you?
I wonder if that was intentional.
I think so. She's there to promote sexuality. I think that's her job.
But trust me,
I was dealing with my wife only, and she was a wise, insightful person, and that really, really helps. One has to get over the hump of saying, I shouldn't turn to such people. It means I'm some kind of nut or psychiatric case. That's not at all so. You know, there are millions and millions of people who haven't had prostate cancer who should be seeing a sex therapist or a marriage counselor at least, if they can't communicate properly. But let me come to that part now, because I want to talk about you and your partner and what you can do. First and foremost, you know what? The essential fact, if I say nothing else today that your listeners should remember, it's you and your spouse, your significant other, should decide to make love rather than just have sex.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And there's so many men, especially, who think that the main point of making love is having intercourse, where in fact the main point of making love is growing closer, having intimacy, is love. And intercourse should be an expression of that, as well as something pleasurable for both parties. And I got to say here, in defense of women, so many times men get to the act of intercourse so fast in their lovemaking, thinking foreplay is just a little thing you do to warm her up, as opposed to the thing you do in order to make her feel good. And prolong it, that they end up, well, cutting their wives short and, frankly, cheating themselves because sex is wham, bang, thank you, ma'am. That's not a great idea.
It's not
for either party. And here I got to say, I say this to men, don't insist that your manhood is exclusively based on your capacity for intercourse. In other words, resolve instead that your main objective is to bond together as a couple physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And if people want to know why a rabbi's talking this way, now you got the point.
Right.
Another point, and you can stop me when we run out of time, because each of these I deal with at great length in webinars, seminars, teleseminars. So these are highlights. The next thing is to focus on different body sensations. This is part of the foreplay now. Extended foreplay means be sensate focused. Look at your wife and engage with her in what I would call whole body sex. Now, that's got to sound pretty good to men and women alike.
Right.
It's something which was really a term that was created with Johnson, Masters and Johnson's in the 60s, but I have my own unique version of what's called sensate focus, which is to say couples need to choose alternative ways of making love, which can include intercourse, but shouldn't start with it as a major goal. So I have what I call the Weinsberg stick method for whole body sex, S-T-I-C-K, method for whole body sex. S stands for stroking each other. I don't mean physically, but psychologically, because almost everybody needs to be stroked. You have to show somebody what you admire most about them. You got to show respect, whether intellectually, spiritually, or emotionally, or physically. You got to do that. Let them know why and how you value them. That's critical. The next thing is T for touch. So stroke and then T for touch. Touch each other physically. Start with a hug, you know, an embrace, whether clothed or not. And you can proceed to mutual massages of front and back and gradually progress from your shoulders to your waist. There are some therapists and counselors who say, start off by excluding the hypersexual areas like the genitals or the breasts, and just give someone a nice massage, but not a full, heavy massage, which can hurt somebody, but something which tantalizes them, builds up their juices, gets their juices flowing, if I can put it that way. Now, that point is eye intercourse, which can be attempted right after stroking and touching, or later on if you are, quote, up for it, if I can use that phrase again. But make sure to apply lubrication for men and women. Make it a more pleasant and pleasurable experience. Make sure you read the nonverbal cues a person generates, not just what he says, but how he sounds or she sounds and moves and so forth. C for cuddle, because you can cuddle certainly after a sex act or the other, or stroking and touching, without any expectations but deriving warmth and support, you know, physically and emotionally. Of course, cuddling ahead of time is great, too, but one shouldn't fall into the stereotype of a man having sex and having, say, intercourse and then falling asleep while his wife wonders what just happened.
Right, yes.
And that last K is kiss. You know, kiss each other gently on the lips, the cheeks, the back, and you can go below the neck but above the waist. This is building up anticipation. It's sensual. In fact, I equate sexuality with sensuality. And once you do the areas that are more neutral but yet responsive and reactive, you can bring your lips elsewhere if mutually acceptable.
Right,
and
mutually.
I have no compunctions if someone says, well, can I add a mixture of whipped cream or your favorite chocolate? Yeah, yeah, no problem. If that heightens your pleasure, whatever works mutually well. I have a lot more to say, but you tell me if we have a little more time.
We have about 2 minutes left of your interview. So what do you want to fit in those last 2 minutes?
Well, I would tell you the third and maybe even more important thing is that a man and woman or a man and spouse partner should communicate openly and often with their partner. In other words, be truly present. I'm a big, big advocate of looking someone in the eyes, you know, the eyes are the mirror to the soul.
Yes.
And really being very present. Can you imagine having sex and having your mind elsewhere? And trust me, millions of people do that. And
oh,
it
yes.
doesn't take a very perceptive spouse to realize it. It's a turnoff. Apart from just communicating while in bed, it's really a good idea when you're not in the bedroom to talk explicitly about sex in a way that's mutually respectful and not awkward for either of you. You can even, if you can't talk it out, write down your needs, ask them to write down their needs, and then compare notes. Explore alternatives like tantric sex exercises. That's good stuff. But again, mutual eye contact and parallel movement and breathing together in and out, all that's good stuff to become fully present and at one with. Oh, I say those things. And one last thing, since the time's running out, I suggest people start dating again. Schedule times to rev up your romance. Watch a hot movie. It doesn't have to be hard porn, but at least what we call erotic movies are really great mood setters. Develop a healthy lifestyle, too. Get fit. Don't just go to pot. And above keep the faith.
Rabbi Ed, I appreciate all this wonderful knowledge, and I hope you'll stay on the line in case some callers have questions. And
sure.
Thanks for being on this interview, and let's go to a break.
Okay.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Taking care of yourself should not be complicated. The process of restoring your health can be simple, easy, and enjoyable by making a few small changes one at a time. That's the principle behind From the Inside Out with your host, Dr. Rhonda Nelson. If you're looking for a simple way to improve your health, we'll provide the motivation, encouragement, and information about how to restore optimal health one step at a time and from the inside out. Tune in every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Join classical homeopath Piper Martin to discover an entirely new way to experience pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. Educate yourself and connect with the possibilities of new choices and opportunities for you and your baby. Learn to use homeopathy to support yourself and your baby both physically and emotionally. We'll also discuss topics specific to all women, such as understanding and accepting our bodies, relating to other women, and how to expand out of your comfort zone and discover new and powerful concepts. Tune in to The Whole Woman, Thursdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Health and Wellness. Taking care of yourself should not be complicated. The process of restoring your health can be simple, easy, and enjoyable by making a few small changes one at a time. That's the principle behind From the Inside Out with your host, Dr. Rhonda Nelson. If you're looking for a simple way to improve your health, we'll provide the motivation, encouragement, and information about how to restore optimal health one step at a time and from the inside out. Tune in every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel. Today we're talking about surviving cancer. My first guest was Rabbi Dr. Ed Weinsberg, author of Conquer Prostate Cancer. My second guest is Kathleen O'Keefe Canavos, two-time breast cancer survivor and author of Surviving Cancerland. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to be here.
And we are very happy to have you here because there's so many people out there that feel lost and don't know what to do.
I know.
So, I know that we have two callers waiting to ask us questions, but I'd like to give a little introduction to have you tell the listening audience a little bit about your journey.
Okay.
Could you do that?
Yes, I would. My journey started in an unusual way. Actually, it kind of ties into Rabbi Dr. Ed Weinberg's program just before this. It was a little X-rated. I had lost my mother to colon cancer 6 months before I was actually diagnosed. And mm-hmm. I had been having nightmares, and even though I was speaking to her on the other side, it was quite a loss for me. And my mother and I were best friends. We were extremely close.
Mm-hmm.
So I started having dreams that were telling me that I had cancer, and I thought, you know what, it's just a residual from watching her go through this, and she had lived with us for the last year while I tried to help her through this transition time. And then my husband and I were in the bathtub. We like to take a bubble bath and watch TV, and we snuggle mm-hmm. in the bathtub and hold each other and wash each other. And he said, "What's this little lump over here?" And I felt it, and it felt like a pea, and I said, "Well, I don't know. I'm going to call the doctor tomorrow." So I did, got right in, had a mammogram, blood test. The doctor couldn't feel anything, even though I still could. He couldn't feel anything. And to make a long story short, I had 4 mammograms and 4 blood tests from October to my birthday, December 19th. And they were all coming back as healthy. And I kept having these dreams telling me, no, you're not healthy. Go back to the doctor. You're really sick. And finally, the dream that did it for me was called the white feather. And mm-hmm. in this dream, a guide appeared to me in the dream, and he said, I said, "Look, I can't go back to the doctors anymore. They don't want to see me. They're not even going to give me an appointment. When I call, they tell me there's nothing that I'm healthy. Go home." And the guide looked at me, handed me a white feather, and said, "If you go back tomorrow without an appointment, just show up on their doorstep and verbally fence with them and imagine holding this feather, you're going to get the treatment you need, which is an operation. You need an operation on that spot. That spot needs to come out." And I said, "But they can't see the spot." And they said, "They'll believe you. If you hold this feather, believe in this feather, you will win." So the next day, of course, my poor husband's getting dragged around with me the whole time I'm doing this, and I show up on my doctor's doorstep, and he said, "Kathy, you're healthy, go home." And I said, "No, I know I'm not. I want you to do exploratory surgery on this spot right here." And he looked like somebody had just shot him. He said, "I can't do that. It's against hospital policy. It's against my policy. That's really... surgery is an important thing. It's very dangerous." And I said, "I know, but I really need for you to do this." and I imagined that feather. And he said, okay, you know what? We're going to do a mammogram, an MRI, and see if there's anything there. So he did an MRI, and he said, it looks like there's a fibristic tumor there, not anything for you to worry about. You're too young for cancer, is what he kept saying. He said, okay, what I'll do is I'll go in, I'll take this fibristic tumor out because it seems to be bothering you so much and worrying you. We're just doing it so that you won't worry anymore. And everything's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. So I went the next day, it was a couple days later, and he put me under. And I remember hearing him say, and I remember saying to him, if we're going to do this surgery, shouldn't we have an oncologist present? And he laughed at me and he said, Kathy, you don't have cancer. It would show up in the blood test. It would show up in the mammograms. There's nothing there. You're healthy. We're just going to take this out to put your mind at ease. So I went under, and then I remember hearing him say while I was under anesthesia, I got it closer up, and I dragged myself up out of anesthesia, and I turned to him on the operating table, and I said, what was it? And the place, you could have heard a pin drop. All you saw were eyes, you know, above the mask, staring at me and my doc. And I remember the anesthesiologist coming over the top of me and saying, did she just talk? And the doctor said, it's what we thought it was, Kathy. It's just a tiny fibristic tumor. You're fine. Go back to sleep. And I heard him say to the anesthesiologist, give her more. Because at that point, I was in terrific pain. I mean, I feel so badly for these women who go under anesthesia and all it does is paralyze their body, but they can feel everything. I had that for just a couple seconds, and it was horrific. So when I did finally wake up in the recovery room, my doctor came in, pulled the curtain behind him. I knew something was really wrong then. He looked at me, and he said, pathology didn't like what they saw when they cut that tumor open. And I said, it was cancer. And he said, yes, it is. I'm sorry. No, I'm going to have to refer you to a specialist. And I'm thinking, I asked for one to begin with. But, you know, and it turned out that it was stage two. And they were afraid it was going to be in my lymph nodes. So I had to go in for a second surgery to make sure that he had clean margins and my lymph nodes weren't involved. And it turned out that my lymph nodes were involved.
Oh.
So as soon as that happened, and this is one of the most important things, and this goes with what Rabbi Dr. Ed Weinsberg was saying, where his oncologist gave him a choice of a number of treatments and said, choose one.
Right.
I put out to the universe, before I went even into surgery, if this is cancer, please send me all the information I need because I'm running up against walls.
Right.
If you really want to help me, you know, help me. I'm open to it. Help me. Send me the information. Well, I got a call from my cousins before I went in for the second surgery, and they said, we know of a Dr. Nagorny out here in California who does a treatment called the CSRA, and that it stands for the Chemo Sensitivity and Resistance Assay, and it's actually a tumor kill and treatment typing. And what he does is he takes a piece of your tumor and he grows it basically in petri dishes, bombards it with every chemotherapy and combination he can come up with, and finds one that doesn't just stop it from growing, but absolutely kills it.
Mm-hmm.
So
wonderful.
When I went in for the second to make sure I clear margins and no lymph node, I already knew it was in my lymph nodes. I knew all this from the dreams.
Uh-huh.
I said to my doctor, but now I'm dealing with the chief of oncological surgery at the Dana-Farber. And I told him, I said, I've been in touch with a Dr. Nagorny in California, and he is sending me a box that has to be refrigerated, and I want you to take a piece of this tumor that you find. And he goes, oh, we don't know if we're going to find one. I said, if you do,
right,
put it in here, and my husband's going to run it down to the post office and send it out before I even wake up. And he goes, this is not hospital policy. I said, I know. Just work with me here, please. This is my second time, you know, and I pulled on his heartstrings because the doctors are very, very good people. They're there to try and help us. Their hands are often tied by hospital policy. And if we have time, I'll get into that and how to play the policy game because it's really important for survival. So anyhow, to make a long story short, he did. He let Peter do that. He brought the piece out, and Peter ran it to the post office and sent it out to Dr. Nagorny, who then, you know, immediately started growing it. And about a week later, a week to 10 days later, I'm in my oncologist's office now, who's the chief of oncology at the Dana-Farber. And he said, a nurse comes in and knocks on the door, and just before the nurse had done that, he said to me, Kathy, we have three treatments you can take. AC, Adriamycin Cytoxin, CMF, and Taxotere. He said, those are the three. Your tumor is hormone receptive, so you're also going to be doing tamoxifen, but those are the three main chemos that I want you to choose from. There's a knock on the door. Again, you know, God's answering. The door opens, and she says, there's a Dr. Nagorny on the phone for you in the office, and he has some test results from Kathy's tumor. And the doctor looks at me, and he goes, I'll be right back. He goes out, and he comes back in, and he says, Dr. Nagorny said only Adriamycin Cytoxin worked in killing your tumor, so that's what we're going to go with.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my
goodness.
He
wanted to know if you had been through breast cancer before, because all of the other chemo treatments didn't work. Your tumor was that resistant to treatment. Only this would work. So if I had chosen the wrong one, and I really believe that my doctor was actually right in giving me a choice on one hand, because he was showing that he was open to having me be responsible for my treatment, to self-advocate, to not just sit there and say, okay, I've got this, you heal me. He was saying, you know, God was saying, this is the right doctor for you, because this one's going to be open to working with other doctors to help you, and we're sending you all the help you need. And so by going through this, I was actually teaching my doctors. And these were well, you know, well-knowledged doctors on cancer. They're the chiefs over there. So they both, you know, two chiefs already have learned something right there. And so I chose Adriamycin Cytoxin. Now, this is an important thing in my story.
Okay, can we make it short so we can go to a break and then come back and answer some callers' questions?
Yes.
So let's go to a break.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you are listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkgaard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
Get the latest information in health and wellness when you tune into On the Radio with Dr. Ray. Each week, you'll find out the latest and greatest from both traditional and holistic perspectives. Your host, Dr. Robert Ray, better known as Dr. 90210, is the best known and most sought after plastic surgeon in Beverly Hills. Dr. Ray, with his co-host, Natalie Day, will help you get the dream body you've always wanted through diet and exercise, not surgery and medicine. On the Radio with Dr. Ray airs live Thursdays at 12 noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel. Today we're talking about surviving cancer. Before the break, we were interviewing Kathleen O'Keefe Canavas, who used intuition and her dreams to help her to become a two-time cancer survivor. And I know that we've had some callers waiting patiently on the line, and so we can get to as many as there are there. What we'll do is we'll have the engineer connect you, we'll hear your question, and then you'll be muted so we can answer it for you. Okay? So our first caller is Patricia.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Patricia. What's your question?
Well, I'd like to know if your speaker, you know, she's been doing what she's been doing for this wonderful long time, but what is she doing now that's more tangible, that's out there helping people right now in the community that have the kind of things she did?
Okay, we will answer that question. Thank you. All right, Kathy, how do you want to answer that?
Well, thank you for calling in, Patricia. I really appreciate that. And I know that we had a caller that dropped in off, and I'm sorry if I was a bit long-winded. I hope you'll call back. Patricia, that's a great question. And let me say that it's all well and good to survive cancer, but I think that when the universe gives you something like your life back, it's time to give back to the universe. And it's actually a very timely question because Dr. Barton and I were talking about this last night. I'm doing a fundraiser for a friend of mine who has a stage 4 bone cancer. She had it in 9 parts of her body, and the doctors basically sent her home to die. And she's doing a special type of holistic treatment because the doctors have given her no hope. And I'm doing this fundraiser for her to help her raise money to do this treatment for another year. And her health insurance is not helping her, which I find so annoying because we all pay into health insurance. And then when they don't help us when we are sick, it's sort of like saying if you pay into a car insurance, we'll only, you know, fix your car if you have an accident on Wednesday with another red car and you have 10 people that are witnessing it. So anyhow, her name is Paris Bauer, and I just love her dearly. I know of her story, and she's basically going this alone to a degree other than her family and friends supporting her. So I'm giving her a fundraiser on Cape Cod at Alberto's Restaurant on October the 2nd at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And although it's a fundraiser, it's almost we're celebrating the fact that she is overcoming this. She's going back to the doctors to get checked, our regular medical doctors, and they're scratching their heads because she should have been dead by now. It's been almost a half a year, and they gave her not very much time at stage 4 bone cancer. But if you're listening and you're not on Cape Cod and would like to donate, her name is Paris Bauer, and you can go to my website, www.survivingcancerland.com, and click on my Facebook page, and I have all the information up there on my Facebook page, and you can send a donation. Any donation would be appreciated. So I hope that answered your question, Patricia, and thank you so much for calling in.
Okay. So can you stress the importance of listening to your inner guidance?
Yes, I can. We were talking about how I went to my doctors and they gave me choices, and I think it's important at this point to stress that my guides sent me to doctors. Even though the girl that I'm giving, I'm involved in the benefit for, is doing this completely holistic and it's working, I think that there's more than one way to skin a cancer, if you know what I mean. My guides didn't tell me to go to Dr. Swami and do holistic only. They said go to your medical doctors. So the guides, the people on the other side, they believe in our medical doctors. Mm-hmm. They believe in this, because if they had told me to go to Dr. Swami, I'd have done it. But they didn't. So, you know, I think that our dreams are important, and there's different ways of dealing with cancer for different people, and my dreams were very important to my surviving, and so were my doctors. So my story is kind of a bridge story. It's a combination of holistic, because I did a lot of things during treatment that my doctors were telling me, no, don't do, because the chemo won't work. And it not only worked, it worked really well, and I had no real side effects compared to a lot of my other friends going through treatment, like, you know, the tingling fingers, the tingling toes. Yeah, I was nauseous, but not as badly as a lot of them. Yes, I did lose my hair, but it came in beautiful, curly, and red. And then after the second time, it came in straight and blonde again. So
amazing what our bodies can do. Well, what happens, because this happened to me, I knew something was wrong. Like you, I had to convince my doctors to do a colonoscopy. No, it can't be. You just had one. Couldn't be possible. Same as you. They wake me up out of anesthetic and tell me you have colon cancer. Mm-hmm. It's like, I told you.
I know.
So what do we do as people who know this in our soul, but we can't get the doctors to believe us?
Well, that brings in knowing how to play the hospital policy game. Our doctors really do, you know, they are so dedicated to their patients. They're working so hard to keep us alive. Unfortunately, a lot of times their hands are tied by hospital policy. Because again, you know, on the positive note, the hospital has to thrive in order for the doctors to be hired. And so hospital policy dictates that if you have a mammogram and it's healthy and you have no symptoms, then you're healthy, go home. But unfortunately, right, a lot of illnesses are asymptomatic when you get them at a time when they can be treated. By the time you have symptoms, it's too late. So what you have to do is, when you know this, when you get those dreams, what I did was I went to my doctors and I said, prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. And they would say, well, we can't. And I'd say, well, I can feel something here. I know you can't, but I can. I can feel it on the inside. And they'd go, oh, you can? Yes, I can. And so then it's like, oh, well, okay, then we can do this. You're having a symptom. When I wanted a colonoscopy because my mother had died of colon cancer. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I had breast cancer. What if something is, you know, somewhere where it's not showing up in the MRIs or somewhere else. If I'm going to be under for a colonoscopy, why don't we do an endoscopy at the same time? You know, I've been ill. That needs to be checked. I'm having a lot of trouble sometimes swallowing. But they will tell you
they can't do two procedures at the same time because they won't be covered.
That's right. And so my doctor said exactly that to me. And I said, well, why not? And he said, because you don't have symptoms. And I said, like what? And he said, horrible stomach pains. I said, oh, they're awful. He said, yeah, but you have to be throwing up blood. And I said, all the time. And he laughed and he goes, okay, Kathy. I said, I told you I had those symptoms. Now you have to do it. And he looked at me because hospital policy dictates that you do. That's the game. Play the game. Win and live. And it turned out that I had a hiatal hernia from vomiting during treatment, and that's why I was having trouble swallowing. Then it goes into my records, and now whenever I have a colonoscopy, I also get an endoscopy.
Good plan. So, Kathy, you have had a lot of experience. Can you wrap it up in two sentences, some hopeful thing you can give to the listeners?
Yes, I think the most hopeful thing is what I said. There's more than one way to skin a cancer. Some people are going to go completely holistic. Some people are going to go completely conventional. And then there's me who goes between the two.
We need to wrap it up, but thank you so much for being my guest today. Today we've heard from Rabbi Dr. Ed Weinsberg, prostate cancer survivor. If you want to get more information, go to www.conquerprostatecancer.com. If you want more information from Kathleen O'Keefe Canavas, then go to www.survivingcancerland.com. Next week, we're going to talk to Chelsea Garfield, co-owner of Good Friends Fitness. She'll tell us why it's better to work out with a friend. And also Dr. Michael A. Smith from Life Extension will be there talking about research about things that will help us to burn body fat and the products to do that. Remember, to help yourself, help someone else. Until next week, goodbye for now.
Thank you so much for joining us this week for the Dr. Melanie Show. Please join your host, Dr. Melanie Barton, again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We'll see you next week for another great program.